Hi, this is Keith Wood, and welcome to Story Mosaics. We have an unusual opportunity to interview some moms in this next month. In fact, I've labeled this series Uncommon Moms because each one of them has an interesting story about a pathway that they have walked through in becoming a mom. And I'm sitting down with Rhonda Eggermeyer, and Rhonda has a great story. In fact, I think, Rhonda, you phrased it as a reluctant mom, correct?
Yes, that is the best way that I describe it.
Which is so interesting because, you know, we come from different perspectives. But well, before we get into that part of the story too deeply, I want to start with maybe that moment in your life where you push the pen in and say, this is the story that kind of summarizes the whole event. Then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more specifically about all of the events that led up to that. So, Ron, help us understand that moment you first recognized that maybe God was going to be redirecting your plans.
Well, I remember very vividly standing in a hospital in Guatemala. And we were down there on a mission trip. We were doing orthopedic surgeries for hips and knees.
Oh, wow.
And my job was to transport patients. And so I had dropped off a patient and I was standing in a hallway and I heard very vividly in my head, it wasn't audible, but it was in my head, you need to adopt. And I stopped I was not moving fast, but I've stopped in my tracks and I was like, what? Because that was not on my radar. It's funny, on the one hand, I knew it was God speaking to me, but on the other hand, yeah, I was thinking, you must be talking to the wrong person. It's like wrong number. That was absolutely not at all part of my plan. And so it was that moment that life kind of changed for me because I didn't immediately say, yay, God wants me to adopt. I kind of hit the brakes and was shocked and just started thinking. I didn't embrace it. I just started thinking what that would mean.
What that would look like.
Yes.
Now, your husband's an anesthesiologist. What's your background, Rhonda?
Oh, I have a PhD in psychology.
Okay. So when you hear this voice, you're analyzing the voice as well.
Oh, absolutely. Part of me thought, oh, great, I'm having a schizophrenic break. So.
And you're thinking, there's a medicine for this. I think I might need a medicine.
Yes, to be honest, my thought was when I heard you need to adopt, it was, please let this be anything but God. You know, at that moment, I would have preferred a schizophrenic break.
That's right. Oh, please, I have to listen to God, but the voices inside my head, I don't have to listen to.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. That's so good. That's so good. Now, so this was not on your radar screen, you say, but and sometimes you refer to it as reluctant motherhood. Is that really the term you use?
Yes, I had a plan for my life. Even as I was starting college as a young woman before I got married, that I really didn't want kids. I didn't enjoy babies and I didn't want to have children. And I wanted to have a career, which is why I, you know, sought out a doctorate in psychology. And I had this big plan for my husband and we were going to work together. And in fact, when I met him, I told him that if he wanted to have a big family or have kids, he should probably date somebody else. And so that was kind of my plan.
Can I tell you that's not exactly a pickup line?
It is not.
That's right. He wasn't put off. That's right. That's right. And so how did he respond? And when and where did you share this with him? Or let me even ask, how did you process this encounter in the hallway there? Let's go to that first and kind of dig okay. into that moment, because I know with myself, sometimes I I hear God's voice in my life and I hear him prompting, but then I ask him, can we try this again? I just want to test the voice. Was it such a rock solid moment that you never had to go back? Or how did you test that? Or how did you receive that message from the Lord?
So as I said, I was in the middle of running patients back and forth.
That's right.
So it was very clear. It was unmistakable. Like I said, it's funny telling God wrong number, because it's like, you know, it's God. It can't possibly be wrong. So the first thing I did was I just kind of put it off. I went on with my day. I just didn't even talk to anyone about it. I just kept going on with what I had to do. But when I got home, I started looking up adoptions. And first I thought, because I was in Guatemala, that I thought, oh, well, I should probably adopt from Guatemala. That must be what God has intended. And when the first thing I looked up about adoptions, an organization called America World popped up. And then I clicked on it, and there was a conference that weekend at College Park. And I was like, oh, no. Because again, I was looking for any excuse to go, oh, see, it's just not possible. So when that came up, I was like, okay, God, you know, I don't want to do this, but I'll go to this conference, this seminar by America World, and see what it would be like to adopt.
I still hear that. I'm going to check this out. I'm following.
I was very much being a mule. It was both feet in front of me. You know, it's like, I'll go, but you're dragging me.
Oh my goodness, Rhonda. That is so real, though. That's the raw edge of this, is a lot of our uncommon moms, their histories are not filled with a yes, 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 you know, Lord. It's all these different emotions that this brings along with it. Now, had you told your husband yet?
It wasn't until I saw the conference, I made up my mind, yes, we'll go to it, that I said to him, I told him, I want to go to this conference. I didn't even tell him about God spoke to me yet. At least I don't think I did. Yeah. I don't think I told him at that point. But I said, I want to go to this adoption conference. And I really don't want to talk about it. I just want to go. I want to see what's going on. I want you to come with me. And I just want to see, but I really don't want to talk to you about it. And so even when we got there, we sat through the whole conference, and he didn't say a word.
He didn't. Wow. Well, he was afraid to.
Maybe. And so it wasn't until after the whole thing. And I have to say, I'm embarrassed now to think how childish I was and how, you know, just how ridiculous my thought pattern was. But I'm out there trying to do, you know, what God wants me to do. And I'm looking. And so, of course, I'm looking at these children going, could I raise you? I could do that? And the answer over and over was no, I am not prepared to do that. I just don't have the skills. Other people have that motherly, you know, skill, which actually I did have. I mean, now obviously I realize it was there. I just didn't recognize it. And that God gives you the grace when you're obedient. He does give you the grace to do the things he's called you to do. But
well, that's right. And he always takes us just one step of the journey at a time. Yes. We never get to see the end from the beginning. Yes. We just take the one step of obedience. And that's beautiful. That's beautiful, because No, you didn't know where it was going to lead. No, you didn't know how you emotionally and spiritually and psychologically would respond to this. But you said yes to the next right step. Wow. That's incredible. Now, you were living in Indianapolis at that time, or were you living? Okay, so
yeah, we were living in Pendleton.
So this conference was 20 minutes from your house on the day you come back.
Right.
On the day you come back from Guatemala. Right. Okay, I'm starting to see God's hand in this.
Me too. That was the problem.
So you're saying no.
It was
no.
undeniable.
Yeah, undeniable. So you're saying over and over again, no, I don't think I could, or no, I don't think that's for me. Where did the next right step take you?
Well, we stopped and we had lunch while we were down in Indy. And so that's where I said, okay, we can talk now
Wow.
after. And as I was telling him about, that's the point where I finally said, you know, while we were on the mission trip, I really got this strong feeling that, you know, God wants me to adopt. And I wasn't ready to tell him I heard God speak to me. And I was just like, at that point, I was just like, it's a strong feeling. I'm not sure. Otherwise, he might be looking for a psychiatrist. So when I said that, though, he said, I've been praying for that for months. And my first reaction, again, I was so childish. I was like, you were praying behind my back. You know, I was like, how dare you?
You say childish, but you know what? I think it's very candid and honest in that pathway. So I love the fact that you are responding from the core of who you are at that point.
Oh, I was shocked because I had already told him that that wasn't what I wanted for my life. And to think that, you know, here he was praying, okay, God, I know I got into this under this one understanding. And I know she won't listen to me if, you know, if I bring it up. So
Wow.
I'm going to just pray until you bring it, either to fruition or not, you know, I'm just going to keep praying. And so, yeah, that was the next situation where I was like, oh my gosh, you're praying behind my back. And so as we talked about it, we were like, well, okay, we feel like this is what God wants us to do, and we'll start the paperwork. And
Yeah.
that's what we did. We started down the path of the paperwork.
Wow. So you just dove in. And now I don't even know what this paperwork looks like. What do you have to do to go through this adoption process?
A lot of little hoops to jump through.
So were you always thinking about an international adoption? I heard you say, talking about that, were you always considering an international adoption then?
It's funny because from the time I was very little, I would say, I don't want to have kids. And but then I would say, but if I did, I would adopt a child overseas because, you know, wanting them to have a better life. And I had never really thought about that I would do that. I just found myself saying that.
Wow.
So it just seemed natural. Well, and the fact that it started in Guatemala, that was kind of in my mind. So yeah, that's kind of how that started. And America World does a lot of international adoption. So a lot of the kids at the seminar were internationally adopted children. So that's kind of what made me think international adoption.
That helps me understand. And so how did you narrow it down? How did you start to find where this next step in your journey would take?
Well, one of the things is that when we were at the America World seminar, that there was a little girl there that she was Chinese, and she was running around, and she was just so adorable. And that just kind of impressed me, and it kind of impressed Dan. And when we were talking about different countries and where we would adopt from, we were able to look at photos online and just some of the countries we considered didn't have international adoption. I think people don't always know that not every country allows international adoption.
I didn't know that.
So not every country allows that. And so as we talked about it, Stan and I both kind of have just focused on China. That seemed to be where our focus was directed. And so and that's true for Aline, you know, our younger daughter. She was a baby, and so that was one different process. It was a different process for Chow, our older daughter. So
So now you're kind of focusing in on China, and first of all, I find the confirmations along the way so so thrilling to hear, because I think this is one of those moments where you look back in your life and you get to truly recall that every moment, because just because child care, child rearing is not a walk in the park for any of us.
Nope.
And to get the chance to recall and say, but this has the earmark of God, the fingerprint of God all over it, even from the moment of your heart being drawn to China. So you make application to China. Is that true then?
Yeah, we made an application through America World to adopt from China. So as the country. And I think we talked to, you know, we were talking about before that we adopted out of birth order. So we had put in our paperwork to adopt, and we put in initially for a baby. And
Okay.
so in that process, well, that's a long story. We ended up adopting a baby. But as part of that process, we had no idea who we were, what baby we would receive. Basically, you just fill out the paperwork and let it go. But one of the things that I think is kind of odd about our situation is, again, I was thinking we filled out the paperwork and we turned it in, and my thought was, oh, now you've done it. You know, because at the time at the
Wow.
conference, they said that families were getting babies in 6 months. So I was like, oh gosh, now we've done it. We're going to have a baby in 6 months. Like even other moms get 9 months.
Yes,
I'm only going to get 6 months.
that's what I was just gonna say, Rhonda. Oh, God, you started me on this trip and you didn't even give me 9 months to
Like, this is not fair. Well,
prepare.
obviously God has a sense of humor, because I remember thinking, you know, that it's done. We filled out the paperwork and this process was rolling. And I remember actually thinking, what's God going to do? Stop all adoptions to slow it down for us? And he actually did. So
Oh my goodness.
many people were applying for adoption internationally at that time that the wait became, it just kept extending. They'd say 6 months, and after 6 months, they'd go, oh no, now it looks like it's going to be another 6 months.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, we were wondering, well, how is this supposed to work out? And there were a lot of things going on in our lives that it was really good that we did have to wait, that just getting, you know, family issues taken care of. But it's funny, it actually took 3 years from the time I
Oh.
applied for adoption at 40, and we did not receive our first child till I was 43.
Rhonda, what is that? How does your heart respond to that? I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster, isn't it?
It is, because on the one hand, I was thinking, once you commit to something, you just want to get on with it.
That's right.
Even if it's something that you're reluctant to do, you're like if you find out you need a surgery, you don't
Yes.
want to wait forever to have the surgery. You want to
That's
get in
right.
and
Let's
get
just get
it
it
done.
done. Yeah.
Well, I was sort of that was sort of my sentiment. It was like once we had filed the paperwork, I wasn't saying, oh, good, you know, it keeps taking a long time. I was like, oh no, I want to get on with this. I want to see who it is we're adopting. And, you know, I would go through periods of I'd be really excited about it, and then I'd be really afraid. And just, yes, an emotional roller coaster is definitely the way I'd describe it.
Wow. Okay, now we're going 3 years down the road.
Yep.
And a lot has transpired in those 3 years,
Yes.
and a lot has transpired in you and in your heart. But I have to grab that moment. Did you fly to China? Did the
Yes.
baby come here? How does that work?
So we flew to China, and I love to travel. So for me, that was the
That's
easiest
right.
part of it. So I was loving all of that, flying to China, seeing new places, doing, you know, interesting things. But that moment, it was just amazing. Well, one of the questions I think a lot of even moms who are excited to adopt have that moment of, will I love this child? I remember Stephen and Mary Beth Chapman. Mary Beth said when they were adopting, how, because she had biological children and she wondered, will I be able to love my adoptive child or adopted child the way I love my biological children? And so, of course, I was having that feeling. I was like, oh my gosh, what if I don't love this kid? What if I do this and, you know, I'm not feeling what a parent should feel? So it was very stressful.
Rhonda, thank you for being so transparent in that moment, because I think that's a very, very, very important issue to kind of work through in your heart along the way. And your transparency gives some people who are considering this some oxygen, because they have that question. So thank you for so very much for being so transparent there.
It's easier to be transparent when you know the story works out.
That's right. Isn't it though? Thank you.
So we are in the hotel. Everything they told us that was supposed to happen, none of it happened. It was a flurry. It was supposed to be this very organized process where we meet the child and we exchange gifts, and none of that happened. It was a flurry. The orphanage nannies were bringing the baby sooner than they had planned. It was a flurry. We couldn't get the gifts. It was just kind of a crazy moment. But we all raced down to the lobby, you know, as quickly as we can from arriving at the hotel, because they tell us the babies are arriving. And so they walk in, and from the picture, we could see Aline. There she was, wearing her little purple onesie. And she was just so cute. And it was just, as soon as we saw her, it was at that point, we were both super eager to just grab her. Yeah, we just wanted her. We were like, okay, now we want her.
Oh my goodness.
So it was, and in that moment, like, yeah, it was, it's difficult to explain. I was still worried. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do this job, but I love this kid. Wow. So, I was really nervous, but still, I was just so excited to hold on to her. And I know every parent says this, but I honestly was like, oh, she's definitely the cutest one. She's just adorable. She's just the cutest one. And I love it that my older daughter says, Mom, every parent thinks that.
That's right. And Chow's the one of reason, isn't she? I mean, she's the logical one.
She is. Oh. She's not very sentimental at all.
Now, how old is she at this point then?
Oh, Ellie, when we adopted her, she was 10 months old. That was the youngest we could adopt.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of funny. I tell her that God had to put us on hold for 3 years because she wasn't born yet.
Oh my
goodness. So God had the right baby for us at the right time. And we applied before she was born. So we had to wait long enough for her to be born.
I love that. So that you can continue to tell her birth story,
yes.
Her birth into your family and how that takes place. So now you're turning around and you're headed back to the United States and you have a child in your arms. That has to be an unreal feeling. And mentally, how do you wrap your, I mean, every time you look down and you see this child, what is your mind processing?
Well, it was really wonderful because they warned us in advance that, frequently babies will bond with one parent or the other, not necessarily both,
I did not know that.
Typically one or the other initially, like they'll really. And so Aline was very bonded to me and, we were flying back. She would not let me put her down. So fortunately I had a little baby carrier that, you know, fits on the front. So I had her in that. And as we were flying, I was kind of trapped in the middle. So one of my, it's heartwarming to me. It was very frustrating for Stan because she needed to be changed and I was stuck in the middle of the row. And so he was closer to the bathroom. And so he had to change her. I handed her away. She cried from the moment she went away to the moment she got back. And it's funny that, you know, God used that to go to build a bond between the two of us.
That's right. That's right.
That, and as soon as her head hit my chest, she calmed right back down. She was completely at peace. She went back to sleep. But what that meant was, on the flight, I was trying to eat. You know, I couldn't sleep because I couldn't get comfortable and lay, you know, kind of lay back. And, but it was okay. It was okay. You know, I keep saying God gives you strength. And so I, you know, I didn't sleep very well and I wasn't able to eat, but it was okay. And I was just, very, very, it was a mixed bag. I was so, so happy. I was loving her and that was great, but I was still very, very nervous about, it's funny. I took all these child development classes as part of my psychology course. And I never thought I would be doing that. So it was information that I took in, took the test and jettisoned that information. And so I kept thinking, when is she supposed to walk? When can she eat solid food? When can she? Like, and Stan, he's an anesthesiologist. Pediatrics is not his area either. Right. So
on his rotation, he just marked that one off as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
So, but you know, we had friends and family and people that were helping us, and it was just a great time. But I had missed a part of the story. So before or in the process, in that 3-year period, waiting for Aline, we were invited to go down to Stephen Curtis Chapman's fundraiser. He was starting Show Hope back then. Originally, it was called Shohana's Hope. And then they changed it just to Show Hope because the name was too long. But we were invited to his house for a fundraiser for them starting that adoption charity. And in the course of going to that fundraiser, we met a lady that was working in China. She was running basically the Hope Foster Home. And she had a lot of children that had medical issues. And she received an award at the Show Hope dinner for all the work that she was doing in China. And so as part of getting to know her and talking to her, I was following her website. And during that 3 years, I saw Chow on her website. And that was the moment I immediately knew that is my child. And Chow frequently asked me, she was like, well, why didn't you pick any of the other kids? Or how did you? And I'm like, I just knew. I saw your face and I went, that is my daughter and she is in China. And so.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were there. We had Aline. We could not apply for, in fact, while we were going to get Aline, we stopped at the Hope Foster Home and saw Chow. We got to see her playing and doing other things, and they wouldn't let us interact with her because in the event that the adoption might not go through, because you can't really, in China, you can't technically select your child. They didn't want us to build any kind of bond or get her hopes up about adoption, but we got to watch her play. And that was just an amazing thing. That was just, she's so sweet and so full of life.
You've got this listening to God thing down pat at this point, but hey, this is an unusual and an uncommon situation because Chow had some medical issues as well, because that's why she was in that unit, correct?
Yes, that is. Her biological mother tried to keep her as long as she could until Chow's, the cancer that Chow had in her eye became so pronounced that she realized that Chow was going to die if she didn't get treatment. And so there was a new Show Hope floor that had opened in her province. And so her mother left her at the doorstep so that the so at a busy time so that the nannies and workers there would find her. And she was taken in there and treated.
So she had cancer. I think you mentioned that it was in her right eye.
Her initially, she had it in her left eye, actually. I
Left eye.
motioned
Okay.
to her right, but she had it in both. Ultimately, she had it in both, but we didn't know that at the time. So when she was still with her biological mother, her left eye became very swollen, and that's when she realized it that she needed treatment or she wouldn't make it.
And here she's being adopted into a family that understands the whole medical and psychological needs that she's going to have during the course of her life. Back up with me though. How you were not allowed to, quote, pick the child.
Right.
So how did you pick child?
Well, it was technical. So we had to wait a year after our adoption of Aline, and we were filing our paperwork again. We found out that there was an adoption agency that handles specifically all of the adoptions from the province that Chow was from.
Okay.
So we, instead of going with the same adoption agency, we went with a different agency.
Okay.
And we went with the agency where Chow's file would ultimately go. And we narrowly defined, you get to pick and choose what you will, a boy or a girl, or what kind of health problems or what age. And so we narrowly defined it that we wanted a little girl between, 3 and 5 with retinoblastoma and no other issues. And so it was like, it was so narrow that it couldn't possibly apply to any other
Yeah,
child.
that's what I was going to say. You've narrowed it down quite a bit. Oh, take me on that trip again on that airplane, because once again you have to say, how does this fit into this new family? Now we have a sometimes they call it a super first. You have a second child that's going to be actually what has been the firstborn, if you will, and now you're adding something to that. So there's a dynamic being played there. But take me first until that time where you're meeting Chow and you're bringing her home. Tell me what that feels like.
That was in a lot of ways more terrifying than bringing Aline home because when we adopted Chow, she was 4. She had been through a lot of trauma. And she had health. Well, at the time she was healthy. We didn't know that she had health issues, but we knew that she had had them previously.
Okay.
And Dr. Joyce warned us that there were things that she wished she could tell us about Chow, but that she couldn't for, because the Chinese government doesn't allow her to communicate that way. So we knew that there was some bad news in the background,
Okay.
but we didn't know what it was. And but when we first saw Chow, like I said, she is just hilarious. She has so much life, and it was really a super great experience adopting her. Just when we first saw her, that she was just so full of like she would wear Stan's hat that she quickly wanted to identify with us, or well, more properly with him. And so she'd wear his baseball cap and she'd wear the little lanyard. And one of her favorite games was to we were in a hotel that had a playroom and she'd put his shoes on and walk around in his shoes. And so it was in some ways scarier because we knew that older children typically had more, especially older children with more trauma, could have more behavioral problems and things. But God blessed us so much that Stan, th this time it was Stan's turn. Stan and Chow bonded so much because I broke my foot within 2 days of getting Chow.
Oh, no.
Yes, we were visiting a zoo and I broke my foot. And so we went to the hospital and I got a cast on, and I was in a cast the whole time that we were in China with the second adoption.
Wow.
So, but that really gave Stan and Chow a lot of time to bond. They would go for walks and get candy. And so, but it was different. It was different trying to develop a relationship with Chow with my foot in a cast. Within a month of our adopting her, we took her in for what we thought was going to be a routine eye exam. And it did not turn out to be routine at all. The doctor told us that she had cancer in the other eye and that it was fairly pronounced and that we needed to start treatment right away. And honestly, I never thought about being in shock before, but this was the one time that I really realized I was in shock, because I realized later I couldn't understand what the doctor was saying. My mind just wouldn't grasp it. The only signal that I had that something was wrong was I kept thinking, why is Stan so pale? Why he looks green? You know, he looks like he's sick. And I'm not taking in anything the doctor's saying. My only thought was Stan doesn't look like he feels well. And he didn't feel well because he was understanding every single word the doctor was saying. He knew what was coming and he knew it far better than I did. And so at first I was in shock and I had no idea what was coming, that she was going to have another round of chemo, another round of surgery. I didn't know any of that was coming. He did. He knew what was coming.
And, you know, you mentioned, and I know now you've had an opportunity to bond. Both of you have had an opportunity to bond with Chow, but you know, he's got this memory of this bonding that he has with this little girl. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's striking him not only because of the cognitive areas of his understanding of the information, but mm-hmm. also of the emotional level of understanding. Well, I think we need to let the folks that are listening to this in on how old the kids are now. Okay. Because this was several years ago. And
yes.
My interaction with you actually has only been in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I've known your kids as older. So how old are the kids now?
Aline is 16. She's our youngest, and Chow is 18.
Okay. And you have been able to celebrate their differences.
Oh, absolutely.
And find their passions and their skills. Tell us a little bit about each one of the children and their individuality.
Well, I have to say, I think we talked about before that I frequently say that the girls are the best gift I never asked for, because I really fought it tooth and nail, but they have been such an incredible blessing to me. And I just, the ways that they're different and interesting. One of the interesting things, the first time we met you, we were at Open Church and you let Chow play the piano and she loved that. And so that's one of the ways they're different. Chow is musically talented. She plays anything that she picks up. Aline has artistic skill, but it's more creative arts and crafts and sewing and baking and things like that, and drawing and painting. And Chow is, as you mentioned earlier, I call them the odd couple. I think sometimes if like the disciples, Chow is all head and
wow.
and logic and reason. And Aline is all heart and impulse and emotion and connection. And it's funny watching the two of them interact, because Aline is like, wasn't that wonderful? That was awesome. This is beautiful. And Chow's like, it's not very practical. But I tell them, you know, people worry that, you know, they always say you have a favorite child. And I tell them I do, but it's a different one on different days. On some days, it's really great to have Aline being huggy and kissy and that little, you know, curl up on your lap, you know, girl. But then other days, it's so, I'm so grateful to have that logical, reasonable, I can reason with her and she'll go, oh, okay, that makes sense. And so depending on the situation in the day, either one can be my favorite.
That's right. I find it humorous. I know you would never say this out loud. Maybe you would, but, the idea of being, okay, you're my favorite today.
Oh, no, we've had that conversation. Yes, we've had that conversation.
Oh. You know, there were two times I met Chow. One was the piano incident. Then she also came in and was taking guitar lessons from my associate. And we would stand out there. And candidly, I didn't know Chow was blind at the moment.
Yeah, people frequently don't.
I've had a chance to meet both the girls and to see them being nurtured. And I have to tell you, when I thought of Uncommon Moms, you were one of the early ones that I said, I want to have this time with you to talk about this and to cast the vision for those who may find parenthood daunting or may find parenthood of uncommon moments in parenting as disconcerting even. But in the midst of that, you found a rhythm to really finding the heart, the very heart of being an uncommon mom and an uncommon family in that respect. You know what? I wish we had much, much more time, but I'm gonna turn this and thank you for joining us. And one of the things I want to say to the Story Mosaic audience is this. I know some of you listen to this in the background, and that's fine. But if we have an opportunity to have some pictures or take this moment, or if you have a question for Rhonda, you can send that question to story.mosaics1@gmail.com. That's the numeral one, not spelled out. story.mosaics1@gmail.com. I promise to send to her any of that correspondence, because you might have a question or you might need something of an understanding of what adoption would mean for you. And maybe you'll have that hallway experience as well, or maybe you've already had it where God's working in your heart and saying, I want you to adopt. And I also think it's really significant, Rhonda, because you adopted later in your life as well. I think that's significant too, because that's another one of those uncommon moments. And don't they have a tendency to keep you young?
I hope so. I think so. I forget sometimes how old I am. So.
I think the way I see your parenting and the way I see your posts online and things like that, Rhonda, is they keep you very young and energized. And it seems like the adventure is not yet over. This has only begun. And so I also want to invite those who are listening to maybe listen to a couple of these other podcasts that have to do with the Uncommon Mom. Each one of them is going to be very, very, very different. And that's the purpose of this series, is to approach motherhood and approach this theme. Although I don't think this one was just for moms. The more you talked, the more I saw Stan in this as well. And maybe I bring Stan back in June and we look at Uncommon Dads. But thank you so much, Rhonda, for spending this time with us, and invite people to go out to Story Mosaics, all one word, storymosaics.com. And you can find the other podcasts that will be out there. And we'll look forward to those. Thank you, Rhonda, for joining us. I'll tell you what, I'm an easy crier, okay? But I haven't made it through any of these interviews without tearing up. And you brought me to tears several times. So thanks for making me cry on this morning when we're doing this. And you have a very, very good day. God bless you.
You too.
And God bless all who are listening.